You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Climate Camp and Plain Stupid are two groups in the United Kingdom which carry out creative direct actions to raise awareness about climate change. A new film by British director Emily James takes us inside the world of these activists. She spent over a year documenting planning meetings, training sessions, and the actions themselves. Her film is titled Just Do It, and it is showing next Friday night here in Vancouver as the opening film of the World Community Film Festival. And Emily James joins me on the phone today from the UK. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
Now, most of our listeners probably won't be familiar with Climate Camp and Plain Stupid. Who are they?
Well, these are two different direct action groups who have a lot of overlapping members, so they work together in different ways. Plain Stupid is an anti-aviation group, so they campaign against aviation expansion because that's one of the biggest growing causes of climate change. Plain Stupid are very well known for doing some quite bold and audacious actions like shutting down Stansted Airport, which is one of London's commuter airports, and they shut that down for a day by occupying the runway. And they also did a banner drop off the roof of the Houses of Parliament, which also got them quite a lot of attention internationally. And then Climate Camp was a group that formed with a kind of wider remit to try and get people talking about the root causes of climate change, which for them was really about economics and capitalism. So they staged large camps where they kind of, you know, put up a kind of occupation-style camp outside of major pieces of infrastructure like coal-fired power stations or Heathrow Airport was another. And they did these annual camps and became a kind of the kind of go-to place for direct action activists who really wanted to kind of get involved in big, audacious stuff.
So when you first approached these two groups and said you wanted to film, what did they say to you?
They said, absolutely not, we wouldn't even consider it. And you know, and for a lot of really valid reasons, because what I was essentially asking them was, is it all right if I come along and create and amass a whole body of video material that could be used against you in court. And, you know, that was really their big concern was, you know, both that the material could be, you know, very dangerous for them legally, but also, you know, it was a big risk for them in terms of how would they look and, you know, how would they be portrayed. And these are organizations, a lot of the people in these organizations have had very bad experiences working with the media in the past and, you know, have been treated pretty poorly by the tabloid media in particular. So they were very, very hesitant, to say the least. It took me quite a long time of talking to them, and as well, I was very lucky. I managed to get a legal firm who do a lot of work representing activists who work with me extensively to work out a way that it could be done to, you know, best protect the people that were participating.
Now, you actually came up with a security protocol. What was in that security protocol?
So basically what we did was, I mean, there were a few basic promises that I could make them, which one was that none of the footage would come out until their court cases were complete. So when I would shoot an action, I would then go away and squirrel away all that video footage in a secret location that nobody else knew, so that it would be very difficult for, you know, I knew that I would never give it up. I also told them that I would go to jail before I would give the footage up. So, you know, they had my kind of word, and they knew that I was the only one who knew where it was. So that was step A. But then even as we were going along on the shoots, the most sort of dangerous thing for them would be that if we were to all be arrested, because I was going along with them, even though I probably wouldn't be prosecuted, I would still have been arrested had they been picked up along the way on the action. And when you are in police custody, it's very easy to get a warrant to search your premises. So, and your person, obviously, anything that you're carrying on you. So I had to make sure that I was never carrying anything. So I had an extensive system of tape runners who would come and pick up material from me while we were shooting and then take that off to a temporary safe house, and then I would go and collect it later and take it to the like primary safe house. So it was all very cloak and dagger. It's a nice story to tell now. At the time, it was very nerve-wracking.
I imagine so. It must have also been just a simple process of building trust through getting to know people.
That's right, yeah. One of the people who appears in the film has kind of talked a lot about that at a lot of our Q&As and stuff here in the UK, because people will often ask the question, why did they participate? And I really love her answer, because she says, it wasn't that Emily convinced us, it was that she built trust in a genuine way. And, I got to know them, and they got to know me, and they could see what I was trying to do. And it wasn't really a matter of winning them over. It was about working together.
You do manage to film some remarkably, I hesitate to use the word intimate in terms of political actions, but you're in somebody's living room and you're filming them trying out U-locks hooked to stepladders. I mean, it's a very, very close look into the lives of these groups.
No, that's right. And I think after a while, I spent a huge amount of time with people. And I also spend a lot of time showing them my previous films and, just like I said, getting to know them, so that after a while, I really was, although it was quite clear that I was there, I was never secretive about what I was filming and stuff, but they got to trust me. And the other thing also that I should mention is that I explained to them the sort of normal process of making a documentary, which would generally involve the documentary filmmaker would get the subjects to sign paperwork towards the beginning of the project, which would basically release the rights of all of that footage so that the filmmaker can go away and cut the film as they see, as they see fit. And that's a pretty standard process. But what I did was I sort of explained the standard process, and then I said to them, but I'm not going to ask you to sign that paperwork until you can see a rough cut of the film, because I want to give you that power in the situation so that you can relax and know that if I inadvertently catch something that you wouldn't have liked me to film, there are some key things. Like, so for example, one of the things you don't ever see in the film is which person cut through the fence to get into some place, because that's a much bigger offense than going through the fence once it's been cut. So there were a few little things like that that I knew, but there were other things that, you just don't know how things are going to play out. So that, I think, gave people the ability to relax and know that at some point they'd be shown what was, what I was planning to put out, and they would have an opportunity to object. And we were very true to our word about that, and we kept track of 150 people through the course of the filming, who we then had to go and show the film to, or get to come to us to show the film, which was a pretty arduous process. But in the end, every single one of them signed, and nobody asked for any changes.
You documented a number of different actions over the course of the year that you were with them. Is there one which particularly stands out for you?
Well, there's the action which was, this was a 2009, a climate camp was in London with a focus on the banking industry and the banking kind of industry's role in climate change and in funding climate change. And so I got access to film a very young group of people who were doing an action on the Royal Bank of Scotland, which is one of the banks that has been bailed out in our bailout here. So it's now effectively, owned by the state, 80% owned by the state. And it's also one of the biggest financiers of oil and gas projects in the country. So I was able to follow this group of about 25 people planning right from the beginning and getting complete access to filming them, planning the action, deciding what it would be, working entirely by consensus without any hierarchy, as you say, practicing in the kitchen with the step ladders that they used to. So what they did was they were revolving doors to the building, and they put step ladders in the revolving doors, and then U-lock, bike locked their necks to the ladders so that they couldn't be removed, and then locked themselves together and blockaded the building for an entire day. And I think the thing that was really amazing to me was to watch these people, I think the average age on the action was 19, and yet there was nobody putting them up to this. There was nobody, you know, there wasn't some sort of puppet master on top giving them the plan or, you know, telling them how they should do it. They did it so completely, genuinely, independently that was just, you know, it gave me a bit of hope for the future.
Why did you decide you wanted to make the film in the first place?
Well, in 2008, maybe I'll take a little bit of a step back. I had been working as a filmmaker in 2005, 6, 7, 8 on a lot of projects around climate change. So I was executive producer on a film called The Age of Stupid, which was quite a big hybrid documentary fiction project starring Pete Postlethwaite. And I was also producing quite a lot of documentaries for Channel 4 here in the UK about sort of issues around climate change. So I was, you know, I was concerned, and I was getting more and more concerned as things sort of, you know, failed to materialize and solutions were not coming, you know, were not coming to the foreground. And in the process of that, I met quite a few of these young activists who were at that point just starting to get involved with Plain Stupid and kind of build Plain Stupid into something. And they asked me in 2008 to help film them shutting down Stansted Airport. So I waited by, you know, in a pre-designated spot at the back of the airport by a fence, and then they turned up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I got the footage, you know, I filmed them going in, and then I got that footage out to the news because they needed somebody who they could trust, who they knew wasn't going to go to the authorities and tell them that it was going to happen. So I agreed to do that, and in the process, I just saw something that really inspired and impressed me. I saw these, you know, young people really kind of pulling together who, they understood how serious this problem was. You know, they weren't, they were under no illusions about how serious it was. And rather than put their head in the sand or just sort of try and pretend that that wasn't happening, their response, or to get depressed, which I think is what a lot of us did around that period, their response was to do something incredibly bold. And I just thought, this is a story that needs to be told and more people need to hear about this.
What kind of reaction have you had to the film?
Well, you know, the reaction in the UK has been fantastic. So the film opened here in the cinemas on quite a, you know, reasonably wide release for a documentary, and we were in 40 different cinemas around the country. And, you know, we had everything from the people who were, you know, sort of marginally involved with the activists coming down and feeling, you know, and coming up to me afterwards and saying, you know, I never really had the guts to go and do it myself, but now I think I will. And then I think some of my favorite are the people who would come up to, and, you know, who would either speak in the Q&As afterwards or who would come up to me afterwards and say, you know, I was really hostile to these people before I saw your film, and now I really want to go and support them. And I think for me, that was really what I always intended. I really wanted to kind of pull the curtain back and show these people that are generally portrayed as being sort of, you know, faceless kind of criminals, and to put a face on them and say, look, you know, these are human beings and they've really thought this through and they really care about what they're doing. You know, they're fun, they're nice, they're people you'd go have a drink with, you know. And I think it's really done that amazingly well and has really kind of changed the way that direct action is being seen, you know, across a kind of wider spectrum. So we're just on the cusp of getting the film out in America and in Canada, and I think that we're hoping that we'll have a similar effect there.
If people can't make it to the screening here in Vancouver, how can they get to see the film?
Right. Well, we are at a number of festivals all across North America over the next few months. And until all of those festival run goes out, we can't put it online, but it will go online eventually. It sort of depends on the timing. So we're going to be showing, and we're also going to be doing community screenings relatively soon, probably in 2 or 3 months' time. So if people want to host a screening, they can get in touch with us on our website, which is justdoitfilm.com. Come get in touch with us. You can host a screening. If you want to make sure that you hear about when it's online to watch it online, then you can send us an email and we'll let you know. Or you can sign up for our mailing list and then you'll definitely hear about it. And hopefully we're going to be on television as well, although we haven't got anything in Canada lined up yet.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Emily.
Oh, well, thank you.
I've been speaking with Emily James. She's director of Just Do It. That's a film about direct action climate activist groups in the United Kingdom. It's showing in Vancouver this coming Friday, February 10th. In fact, it's the opening film of the World Community Film Festival, which is BC's largest social justice film festival. The festival takes place at Langara College and runs February 10th to 12th. If you want more information about the film, then you can go to their website. It's justdoitfilm.com, and you can find information about when and where it's showing, and also about how to organize a community screening in your town.